Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is DynaCache Trace Analysis Object Caching. The presenter is Varun Talapragadaira. Varun has been in WebSphere Application Server Support since 2006. He is responsible for solving customer problems related to WebSphere Application Server with specialization in various components, including dynamic caching, session management, extreme scale, XC10, web services, web container, JSP, JSF, class loader, SIP, and security. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Varun.
Thank you, Kathy. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to my presentation on object cache replication trace analysis. So my email ID is listed here on the very first slide. So for any questions in later point of today, you can contact me via email, and I'm more than happy to answer any of these questions. Let's move on to slide number two, Kathy. So today's agenda is we will talk about the overview of the DynaCache with respect to object caching, and then we will talk about a sample application that I use throughout this trace analysis. And then we will talk briefly about the cache instance and the property file, overview on that. And then we will briefly discuss on the configuration on how we configured on the application server side. Spend some more time on analyzing traces. That is the main agenda for this. And then we will talk about these traces on these following replication types, which is push and pull, and then push only and not shared. And of course, we will not be using any of the pull here. We'll talk about no replication and what will happen when the no replication is selected. Please note that I already presented some of the technical exchanges earlier on the DynaCache, which is a complete overview on the DynaCache that covers servlets, JSP, and object caching, and another one on detailed trace analysis on servlet and JSP caching. So for those who did not attend that, those presentations, they can very well replay them by looking into the technical exchange of the WebSphere application server technical exchange website. So this presentation, right, I'm more concentrating on the trace analysis for the object cache replication. So let's move on to slide number three. Brief overview is here. IBM actually provides DynaCache feature as a great way to really improve the performance of the J2E applications. We all know that, right? With this DynaCache, apart from servlet JSP caching, we can cache the Java objects as well, POJO objects, so thereby improve the performance of the J2E applications. One can use the cache replication with the help of the DynaCache, and cache instance is the core here to store the objects, retrieving them and sharing those objects to the other JVMs. So also, DynaCache uses the another internal feature, which is called the Data Replication Service, DRS, to replicate the objects to any other JVMs in the cluster. You can also configure to have a separate cache instance for each of the applications. So if you have more than one application, you can very well configure whatever the cache instance that you are needing for those applications separately. Thereby, you can isolate all of these cache instances depends on the applications. As we all know that the base cache is the default cache for the servlet caching. For object caching, default cache is the name which we which is used as a default in any of these cases. So if one don't want to use the default cache, then we can certainly use the custom cache, and the custom cache can be created via admin console, property file, or the web.xml file, or programmatically. Let's move on to slide number 4. So IBM WebSphere application servers Dynacache implementation, right? It provides simple APIs to cache the objects or retrieve the objects or manipulate the objects. So using these interfaces, right, the J2E applications can definitely manipulate, inspect them, and then whatever they can do from the application side. You can always refer the these APIs from the WebSphere application servers information center for more details on what methods it provides to manipulate the cache. So it is all available in the info centers of the application servers manuals. So in, as I mentioned in my earlier slide, if you really don't want to use the custom cache, one can always use a default cache. So the JNDN name is provided here. It's the services slash cache slash distributed map. That is the default cache, that the JNDN name for that, and we can use that JNDN name if you do not want to use the custom cache. Here is the sample on how you can look up from the code to get the distributed map object for a custom cache instance. For example, here I took as a instance underscore one. That is initial lookup and how you can do that from the code. Move on to slide number 5. As I mentioned earlier, right, cache instance can be created in several ways. One is admin console, right, property files, and with the help of web.xml file and web binding XML file, and also programmatically, right? Here is a simple example on how you can create a cache instance via cache instance.properties file, where you can provide all these properties for the replication and cache size, frequency of the cleanup frequency, replication type. You can give all these characteristics for this cache instance via this cache instance.property file. And the lookup is also there, where you can it's the same like any other lookup for this specific cache instance via the cache instances property file. So on the right side, we can see the web.xml way where how we can create the cache instance with web.xml file and web binding XML file. Admin console and properties file and coding via the programmatic way are the most oftenly used ways to create the cache instances. But I haven't seen any customers using the web.xml file and IBM web binding XML file way. Those are the cache instances, and admin console and programmatic way are the most commonly used ones. Let's move on to slide number 6. So here is the overall pictorial diagram of the Dynacache, where it fits in the environment, right? As you can see at the top, right, these are all different types of caching that purely includes the object caching as well, apart from the servlet caching, command caching, and web services caching. The cachepec.xml file is the one which is used for the servlets and JSPs, that is the policy file, and these API calls where you see the APIs, right? That is for the object caching. And of course, you can use them if you are using a custom cache. The diagram also shows various other features of the Dyna cache. For example, disk cache and also the disk offload feature, and also the replication service support, right, where you can replicate the objects from one JVM to the other JVM. External cache support, like you can plug Extreme Scale as the caching provider here, or XC10 as the caching provider, apart from normal DynaCache that we use in the JVMs. So you can view this. You can also view the stats, right, with the Cache Monitor application. So one thing I really wanted to stress here is that the Cache Monitor application, the base Cache Monitor application that we provide via the with the product, is the only one supported Cache Monitor application. We do not support any issues that comes with the extended Cache Monitor application, where you can view some of the object cache instances, entries, and other stuff. So here I just provided my earlier WebSphere application servers, you know, technical exchange presentation link that I talked about earlier is also provided here for your reference. Move on to slide 7. So we will talk a few words on the sample application that I used throughout this presentation, right? Throughout the trace analysis, I use the sample application that I have with me. Of course, this is not a IBM sample that we ship with the product, but this is a sample that I have, and I am using this. Moving on to slide number 8. So here is what we see when I access the application that I have, right? So though I'm not going more in details here, I wanted to just show you what I used here, right? I used the, out of all, I used the only cache it and cache get it. Cache it and get it are the only two links that I used. Of course, on the left-hand side, that is what you see when I access my MaxCache web application. And if I really want to cache it, I click on the cache it and give some more details. As you can see on the right side, right, when I click on the cache it and enter the details internally, right, it's a simple distributed map API call. Before that, it calls a session bean, and then internally it calls one of the implementation class that calls the distributed map API call to put the object into the map with the given details. And also when we hit on get it, right, with the provided a link there, it gives some details there. It gives it again. It's a simple API call that pulls the actual object from the cache for a given key that you specify. In the next slides, right, we will see what info we need to enter whenever we click on a cache it or get it. Let's move on to slide number 9. So it's a here you go. This is a sample application, right? The left screen shot, right, that I have shows what we see when we click on a cache it. Here, whatever we provide as a key will be actual cache ID, right? And we can see that same cache ID in the cache monitor as well. So Here in this application, right, we need to provide the actual JNDN name with which the lookup will be done to place the objects in the map, right? Whatever details that I provide here will override the details that are already have configured on the cache instances page when I define a cache instance, which is a custom cache instance. When we click on the cache the object button, the objects get cached here. And the screenshot on the right side, right, that is what we see when we click on a GetIt. Like we are simply providing a key and JNDN name there to retrieve the object for a given specific key and JNDN name. It will look up for that specific object, and for a given key, it will get that specific object from the Dana cache. Moving on to slide 10. Here is let's discuss briefly about the cache instance where we can create the cache instance and what attributes we can provide with the cache instance, those kind of things. Let's move on to 11. So if one don't want to use the default cache, right, a custom cache can be created from the WebSphere application server admin console. So again, that can be, as I mentioned earlier, it can be created via the admin console or property file and other ways. But here in this example, I'm just creating from the application server admin console under resources, cache instances, and object cache instance. That's where when you click on new, you will get this right-hand side page where we need to provide the JNDN name there and the cache instance name there, right? So we can also specify whether we need to enable, really need the cache replication or not. If it is needed, then we need to enable, we can enable cache replication here from this panel as well. So if enable cache replication is selected, right, then we need to select a couple of things. One is the replication domain. That is the one we need to select out of all the replication domains available, replication domains. Also, if we use the cache replication, right, we have to we need to select whether it is not shared, you really want to share with both push-pull, push-only, and then of course we do not use the pull-only, that is a deprecated version, and we never use that. We will talk about these options, both push-pull, push-only, and not shared, what will happen with respect to the trace analysis in the next few slides. Move on to slide number 12. So configuration, right? Let's see how we can configure the cache instance and the replication, right? While capturing these traces, what did I do? I just want to show you. Move on to slide number 13. So I have created a cluster with a very simple cluster with two members, access member 1 and access member 2, and I have created a cache instance named object caching Varun. That is a cache instance name I created with the JNDN name com IBM/Varun/object caching. And I have the other configuration settings like cache replication enabled here, right? Also, selected the right type of the replication based on what I need, depends on what type of traces I'm gathering. So we'll discuss that when we go into the trace analysis in detail. And I have already created a replication domain. That is the key here. DRS, right, uses this replication domain to replicate the data from one JVM to the other JVM based on the details that you create here. So I have created a replication domain called DynaCache Test Replication, and so I'm using that from the drop down for full group replication domain. This is all in the cache instances page, right? These are all the things that I can see when I go into the when I create a new cache instance that I discussed earlier. So, of course, this is since you are creating a cache instance, it's a custom cache settings, right? And if you do not want to use the custom cache, then we can rely on the default cache. I think I have a screenshot after this. I can show you where we can define that as well. Move on to slide number 14. This one, right, as I mentioned in my earlier slide, right, if we do not want to use the custom cache instance, then the settings, the default settings, we call it as, will be used. And we can see the default settings from admin console if you navigate to app servers, right, application servers, server name, and DynaCache service panel. If we wanted to use the default settings, we need to make sure that these same changes need to be done in all the instances of the cluster members. Otherwise, there will be a mismatch between these application servers, and data might not be replicated to other JVMs, right? And also, please note that if custom cache is defined, then custom cache settings will override these default settings. So whatever you use in the custom cache settings will be used, but these values will not be ineffective. Move on to slide number 15. We'll talk about the trace analysis, right? So move on to slide number 16. So I have the first setting with the replication type to both push and pull. Like I mentioned in my earlier slides, right, the replication type, you can select that. But here, right, whatever you select there, I wanted to mention one thing here is that whatever the settings that you are providing here, these are the application level settings, right? These settings will override the cache instance level settings. So the I have the selected replication type to both push and pull, right? And the I'm sending initial request to access member 2, right? And then access the application again on the same JVM, which is access member 2. And then we will see that the object gets pulled from the cache. And then access the same application, same object, and try to get it from the access member 1. It should serve from the cache as well, right? Because we have enabled the cache replication here with both push and pull. So when I say both push and pull, what it means is as soon as the request goes to access member 2, like how I gave here with a key as Varun push pull, and then I gave the time to leave, which is an invalidation timeout, which is 300, which is 5 minutes. And then I just selected push and pull here, and I gave the JNDA name, whatever the JNDA name that I have for my cache instance. And then I'm just clicking on cache the object, and then immediately after that, when I immediately after that, the entries, cache IDs, will only be replicated to other JVMs. In this case, the cache IDs will be replicated to JVM 1, but not the content of that object. The content of the object will still be in access member 2. So when I access the access member 2 again, this is what I see on the cache monitor application on the left on the screenshot, on the central screenshot, where it says cache hits, write one, and then we should be able to see the cache hits as soon as we hit the access member 1 as well. So access member 2 will only send these cache IDs to the other JVM, access member 1, and then access member 1, as soon as it receives a request, it will check for the cache ID if it is available there. Of course, it is available. And then it will see if it really needs to pull the complete data of the object, right, object content, from it has to serve from the same JVM, access member 1, or it needs to pull from access member 2. So we will see trace points on both these JVMs, juggling between these JVMs to see what will happen when access number 2 is accessed and what will happen as soon as access member 2 sends these entries to other JVMs and other stuff. Moving on to slide number 17. So here, right, as I mentioned, I'm accessing the application on access member 2 here, and the DynaCache will set ID, whatever the ID, cache ID that we see in the cache monitor is being set here, right? And we also see the sharing policy to be 4, which is 4 means push and pull, both push and pull, and time to leave, which is a 300, and then other details of the configuration, which is being loaded here. And the object is set here. As soon as the object is set here on access member 2, access member 2 will announce these entries to other JVMs in the cluster to tell other JVMs that, okay, I have these entries. I need to send these entries to all of you guys, right? So that is what it tells. This announce entries is the keyword where it tells us that it is trying to push these entries to the other JVMs in the cluster. So move on to slide number 18. Before it, as soon as it announce entries, we are still in the announce entries, right? Announce entries, as soon as it knows that it needs to push some of the entries to the other JVMs, it will serialize those messages, and you can see the DCM timestamp and DCM message ID. Those are the key items here to note, because we will track the traces based on these two on the other JVMs, which is access number 1. So make a note of this. And it serializes it, and then DRS will now send the content, the cache IDs to the other JVMs by announce entries, right? Announce entries exists here at the end. It will process sending it, and then it will push these entries to the other JVMs with whatever the list of IDs it needs to send. Move on to slide number 19. So here, what I'm trying to do is, once it sends, right, I'm accessing the object again on the same JVM, which is access number 2, where, as you can see, I see a cache hit here, local cache hit, and that means the cache is available local to that JVM, and it is pulled from this local cache, local Dana cache, and it doesn't need to get the entries or the data from the other JVMs. That's what it means. And if you see the should pull to false, that means it doesn't need to pull from the other JVMs. It has to just get the data for a given cache ID from the same JVM, right? And I see at the center, I also try to put what I see from the application, right? These are the some system out statements are also there. Those system out statements are the simple things that you see in the screenshot there on the browser. Whatever you see, I'm just trying to show here as well. Once I have that, cache it, I'm trying to hit the access member 1, which is the other JVM in the cluster, as soon as access member 2 announces the entries, right? I'm trying to see what trace point do we see, right? I see a process received message. It knows that there are some entries that needs to pull, right, from the other JVM, and the other JVM is access member 2, and it will process the received message now. Move on to slide number 20. So here again, right, we are in access member 1, where it is trying to when we try to access the object, or when we try to access the application on access member 2 with this cache ID, right, if we try to get it, right, this is what we see. Should pull to true. That means it needs to pull the data from the other JVMs, right, other JVM, and it knows that it has a cache entry, right, and for that cache entry, it needs to pull the data from the other JVM. And if you see, now access member 1 will send a request to other JVM, right, for these entries. So for a given message ID, it tries to get the content of the ID Varun push pull from the JVM access number 2. This is what it is happening. If you see that, it is trying to send server name, right, and then it sends to access member 2 here at the bottom, right, and then it will request these content to be pushed from the access number 2 to access number 1 here. Go on to slide number 21. So, it is still in the process of sending this message or the request to the access member 2 here. This is where exactly it sends the request to access member 2 to get the content for a given cache ID from access member 1, right? And on the I'm juggling to again here access member 2 traces to see what's happening. Message received here, and then access member 2 will simply look for that specific entries, right? And then for the specific entry, it push the data to the other JVM, which is access member 1 here. Move on to slide number 22. Now, I'm coming back again to access member 1 to see what will happen if you access the access member 1, right? Now we know that we have one entry, and then we send a request to access member 2, and then we know that the access member 2 sent this content for that specific entry to access member 1. Now I'm trying to access the object again from access member 1. See, as you can see, this is the object, remote object hit. That means it tells me that we found the object content remotely, right, because we pulled the data from the other object of other application server, which is access member 2 here, right? The screenshot shows me that, okay, you successfully returned object data validated. It is success here, right? And then the system out statements also tells me that we have that object from X DynaCache. So after 5 minutes, right, because since you remember, we gave the invalidation timeout to be time to leave to be 300 seconds, which is 5 minutes. So after 5 minutes, right, no matter what, the data gets invalidated, right, from access member 1 here, because now we know that the content and the object are here in access member 1. This gets invalidated from access member 1. So DRS, what it does is DynaCache will send these invalidation events with the help of DRS to notify that other members in the cluster needs to invalidate too, right? So let's see what will happen on the other member to see what happens, whether it gets invalidated or not. Moving on to slide number 23. As soon as the invalidates, right, if the cache gets removed from access member 1, right, where you see the cause 3, source 5, cause is timeout, this got removed, this got invalidated locally, right, because of the timeout value. We clearly document here in these traces what is the reason to be removal of the cache entries from the cache, DynaCache. So these are the keywords where we can see, right? And immediately I'm looking into these traces from access number 2, and we see that the cache gets removed from there as well, and the cause is invalidation source is 2, which is remote. The invalidation is happening remotely on the other JVMs. So once the invalidation happens on member 1, removals need to be happening on member 2 as well and all the cluster members. So after that, right, after the cache gets removed, I'm just trying to see what do we see if we try to access the application again. We obviously see a cache miss and it gets cached again based on whatever. We're not able to see the object, right? So that's the reason we see a cache miss here on access number 2. Moving on to slide number 24. So this is all we talked about is push-pull, right? But what happens if you select to push only, right? Again, I selected as push only, and then sending the initial request to access member 2, and then accessing the access member 2 again, we see a cache hit definitely. And access member 1 again, right, we see a cache hit. And what will happen if you access after the cache invalidation? The trace points are almost similar, except the fact that in push only, right, as soon as the request comes to access member 1, it will cache the object initially, right, and then it will push all the information, including the all the content as well as the cache entries to other JVMs. So if I have a cache ID, right, which is Warum push only, right, then entire object and entire cache entries will be pushed to all JVMs in the cluster. So this is what you see when you get it, right, when you cache it. What do you see in the output of the application browser, right? This is what you see, right, what sharing policy that I am using and what keys that and other stuff, and you obviously you can see cache hit here, cache content, right, from the cache monitor page, where you see the warrant push only is a cache content, right, cache ID, especially when you click on the cache contents here, right. Moving on to slide number 25. So accessing the access member 2 here, right, we see that the set ID were on push only and sharing policy to 2, which is push only, and then time to leave, whatever I provided from the application, right? I'm just showing them here. And we are, that Varun push only is the key here, right? And then DRS will push the entries content, entire content to the other JVMs in the cluster. If you see this here, sharing policy, push only, and whatever you have, this is a configuration again, right? And the object size, value size, actually I selected that as 11 kilobytes, and that's the reason it is showing 11.456. And then publish these events to the other JVMs so that the other JVMs can get these entries as well as the content to be ready when a request with that specific cache ID comes. Moving on to slide number 26. So again, right, normally if any message that needs to be transferred or sent from one JVM to the other JVM, DRS always serializes before sending it. It is serialization is happening here. Again, this even for the serialization and this message ID and timestamps are very key here, because based on those two, I'm just searching the other traces to see what's happening. Right. DRS will now, right, push and send these entries contents to the other JVMs in the cluster. This is exactly where it is sending all these entries and the content. Then the destination, and it shows the destination where it is sending and what it is sending, how much of the payload size in bytes, what is the size of the objects that it is sending, right? And those are all the information it is giving in these blocks, right? And DRS now here at the end, it sends these entries and the cache content and the cache entries to the other JVMs, which is a JVM access number one. Moving on to slide number 27. I am, after this is sent, right, I'm just trying to access the access number two again to see what we see in the trace points, right? That is a set ID, and we see a local cache it because it is local to that specific JVM. It is found in the same cache for the, which is local to that JVM, and then I immediately jumped into access number one as soon as access number two pushed these entries, right? I see that process received message. It knows that, okay, there is some messages which needs to be received, and immediately process these received messages to pull it into this access number one. Again, we need to observe these DCM timestamps and the message IDs, which are very key here, apart from the domain name and cache instance name and JNDA names of the cache instances. Moving on to 28. So, as soon as it processes the messages, right, it sets these entries in that specific access number one JVM, because access number two already sent these entries and content. Now access number one is making ready for users to have these content served from the cache. So that's where the DRS comes in picture, right? And then the performance is very highly improved here. So it is setting this entry here, and then if you see that, right, at the middle, that is exactly what is the sending server name and what is the size of the objects that gets cached, and what was the sharing policy, etc., from the other JVM. It pulls it from the other JVM, and then it sets these entries ready for the users. Moving on to slide number 29. So now, after these entries are already set, right, I'm just simply accessing the Access Member 1 to see what's happening. And we know that these entries are already there, set locally into the JVM Access Member 1. We see set ID there and local cache it. We know that it has been, when you see the cache it, that means it has been served from the cache. And after that, after a 5 minutes interval, we see that the cache gets invalidated, where, you know, the invalidation events, cache gets removed here, and invalidation, it's because of the cause is 3, source equal to 5. Because of that, because of the invalidation cause, it is removing these entries on access member 2, and then these entries, invalidation events will be sent to access member 1 as well to get these entries removed from the cache. Moving on to slide number 30. So here, cache invalidation on access member 1, right, it removes the cache here, and it's the same kind of trace points where it invalidates and removes the cache from the access member 1 as well. So as soon as the object gets removed from access number 1 and access number 2, if you try to access it again, right, if you look up and try to get the object for a key warrant push only, you would see that it's a cache miss, and it tells me that it is not served from the cache. You can see the screenshots here. The same message has been printed in the system out log as well. That tells me that it is not served from the cache. Click on the go to slide number 31. So this is another kind of replication type, which is a not shared, right? Not shared means it is not sharing any of the contents that it has for one JVM to other JVM. All it is sharing is only the invalidation events. So I selected a replication type to not shared. Initial request, I'm sending it to access member 2, and then I'm accessing it from the access member 2 again, right? I would see a cache miss. A cache hit, and what happens if the if I access the access member 2 after cache invalidation, right, I would see a cache miss, and after the invalidation from the access number 1, I would see obviously a cache miss. But what we would really want to see here is to see if the invalidation events are properly flowing between JVMs or not from access number 2 to access number 1. So the content will not get replicated to the other JVMs here. So most of the time when especially for the portal and commerce, right, they use internal cache instances rigorously from the portal and commerce. So if you really don't want the replication to be replication type, and you do not want the replication, right, quite often we ask them to go for not shared, because only the invalidation events will be replicated to the other JVMs. Then, if you see the right-hand side, that is where I I set this key to be Varun-not shared, and of course I'm giving it time to leave to see if it is getting invalidated after 5 minutes or not, and then it get replicated to the other JVM or not. That's what I'm going to see. With the given JNDA name, com IBM Varun object caching, that is a JNDA name, and I'm using this. Moving on to slide number 32. So access number 2, you know that it's a set ID is here, and then you know that since it is a not shared, the cache entries will not be replicated with the sharing policy, not shared, right? Only the invalidation events get replicated. And you see access number 2 again, right? You would see a cache hit, but you know, you can see the same thing in the extended cache monitor, right? If you click on the cache content for a given specific cache instance JNDA name, you see all these there, right? The replication type to be not shared, and you can observe that. And go to slide number 32. So we are invalidating after the timeout value, right? Invalidation on access number 2, right? Access number 2 simply removes the cache, right, from access number 2 itself. We know that the replication it gets invalidated from access number 2, and then it also replicates the invalidation events to access number 1. So if you can see, the access number 1 also removes the cache, cache ID, right? And then you can see the source and cause. It is because of the timeout and remotely got invalidated. And if you see in the access number 2, it's locally invalidated because of the timeout. Go on to slide number 34. So this is a place where if you are not selecting the replication at all, right, the checkbox in the very first cache instance panel that I mentioned, if you are not using it, right, no replication, the object gets cached in each of the JVM, no replication events to any of the other JVMs, no invalidation events flowed from one JVM to the other JVM. It just simply uses its own cache from that specific JVM. But there is no replication at all from one JVM to the other JVM, including the invalidation events. But I don't have, it's a simple trace point that we saw earlier, but that is specific to only that JVM only. Right. Move on to slide number 35. So in summary, right, we looked into the trace points for push and pull, push only, not shared, and we also talked about what will happen if you do not have the replication enabled. Moving on to slide number 36.
Thank you for a great presentation. Now it's time to move on to the Q&A session. We do have a question that came in from the web, so I'm going to actually bring this back because I believe the question came in on slide number 3, but it came in from Naveen, and the question says, can you please suggest the previous cache about servlet JSP referenced by Varun?
Yeah, I can answer that. So, Naveen, you can certainly look into the WebSphere Technical Exchange website and click on previous button and search with my name. You would see all these presentations that I provided earlier, including not only this Dynacache, but any other presentations that I provided. But to answer your question,
there are two more presentations, right, on the dynamic caching. You will get one on the basics of the dynamic caching, and then second one is the detailed trace analysis on servlet and JSP caching. You would find them, you would find the recordings as well from that technical exchange website.
So what I can do, Varun, is when we find that link, that session you referenced, I can put that into the tech doc where it will be stored with the recording as well. At this time, there are no more questions, so we will conclude the presentation. We hope the presentation today has been valuable to you. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Varun, for presenting today.
Thank you very much, Holly.
You all have a great day.